This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. As the fizzy, busy holiday season draws to a close, we get back to the everyday juggle of families and friendships and work and texting the babysitter and responding to that email and exercising and getting to the grocery store. On this next to the last day of the year, we're pausing to reflect on how we navigate a world so unlike that of our parents. Today, no job is a job for life. We live longer, but will likely retire with less. We now interact with friends more online than in person. Value is measured in page views, and how we choose to live could have severe consequences for the future of the planet. So, how to pursue a life that has meaning and richness in today's complicated world? Roman Krznarek suggests looking to the past. We spoke to him last year about finding fulfilling work. Now he's out with a new book called How Should We Live, which peers into the near and ancient past for examples of how people through the ages approached love and work and family and time and money and death and creativity and other human challenges. Roman Krznarek, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me on, Virginia.
You draw a lot of parallels between the changes in the way that we approached family, relationships, childcare, the concept of the housewife. There are a lot of things, Rubicons of sorts, that we cross in the industrial era. Talk to us about that. What is it about the model of production that changed how we live our lives?
Well, one thing has to do with parenting. So before the Industrial Revolution, not many people know this, but men actually were much more involved in childcare than they are today. And today we think that the super dad who can change nappies, diapers, blindfolded is a modern invention. But no, actually go back to pre-industrial America or Europe, you'll find that men were tended to be working more around the household, sometimes in craft or agriculture. And that meant they were more around in the home. And also partly because women died younger and in childbirth, men were taking on more of those domestic tasks. Maybe they didn't necessarily rock the cradle or the crib, but they certainly made it and cut the hay for it. From childcare, you can move to things like time. I think the Industrial Revolution and factory work change the way we think about time. You know, today, 25% of Americans say that they always feel rushed. And part of the reason is because we started being rushed by industrial time. You know, even just look at how clocks were invented and changed. In the medieval period, clocks used to chime only once an hour. By the year 1700, they had minute hands on them. By 1800, they had second hands. You know, time was being sliced up into smaller and smaller periods, and we've inherited this high-stress, high-speed legacy.
But you urge us to reinvent time, and I'm wondering how. I mean, if everybody is on the same clock and buys into this idea, this need for real-time response that we're rushing about, how do we alone begin to rethink it, and what difference does that make?
I think the first thing to do is to get a bit of historical perspective and think, look, Leonardo da Vinci, he wasn't constantly looking at his watch or checking his electronic calendar when he was painting The Last Supper. You know, it doesn't have to be this way, and our obsession with time is something of a social invention. I mean, the first thing to do, I think, is to try some, you know, putting yourself on a chronological diet, I like to think of it. So try and spend a weekend without a watch, without clocks surrounding every wall around you in your house. And it could be a total disaster, but you might find it strangely liberating. But equally, I think we can indulge in slow time activities. If you go to a museum or art gallery, don't try and see everything. Go and see one room or even one painting and see what it does to you. I mean, something I do every morning, in fact, which I did this morning, which is I go out into my garden or into a park and try and find one thing that has just changed, a tiny little change in nature. And it brings a moment of stillness into the day and I think can help us at least deal with some of that overload of emails and phone calls we're constantly getting and put you into a bit of a different zone.
We're speaking with Roman Krznarek. He's a cultural thinker. He's a founding faculty member of the School of Life in London. And he's out with a new book called How Should We Live? It's a book about looking to history to solve some of our modern problems. One of the things I noticed in your book, John Maynard Keynes predicting that we will have so much free time in the future, sped up, you know, by our increased technology, that we'll have to figure out what to do with it. Now, meanwhile, we are actually working less than
people were in his time, but feel like we are working more? How do we actually change our perceptions of how we work based on looking at history?
Yeah, the economist John Maynard Keynes was a smart man, but he was very bad at predicting the future in some ways. I mean, he really did think that our biggest problem would be dealing with our abundant leisure time, because we will have had so much industrial progress, we would only have to work 4 hours a day. Now, we all know that he was remarkably wrong. And the reason he was wrong is because he didn't predict that we were going to keep ratcheting up our levels of consumption, that we'd want faster cars and bigger homes and nicer clothes. We keep pushing ourselves to work harder and harder and harder to earn more and more money because of the, what I think, a somewhat mistaken idea that the good life comes from material possessions and consumer lifestyles. And I think there's growing evidence that it just isn't the case, that as your income goes up, of course your happiness goes up for a while, but then it will stop rising up as quickly as your income and will begin to level off, and you're going to be looking for deeper things in life. And so I think that we need to, in a way, rethink our attitude to consumer lifestyle, and particularly around Christmas time, where people are, you know, spending lots of money and shopping and so on. You can actually start looking to the past, to the amazing examples of simple living in history.
The question is whether we can do this. We can pull away from the way that we've been doing things. You write in the book about the inheritance of belief. You know, how many of us just pick up the habits of our parents or our cultures. A great Einstein quote featured in there: common sense is the collection of prejudices acquired by the age of 18. So, Roman, we sit here, we read your book, we discuss it, we think about how we could be living differently. But how do we actually pull ourselves away from a culture that believes that giving great Christmas presents gives you value, or believes that success can be measured by how many views you get or how many people are searching for you on the internet?
I think one thing to do is to try and look back to inspiring figures from history, people who broke the rules, people who experimented, and see what you can learn from them. Take, for example, someone that everybody knows, the great 19th century American naturalist Henry David Thoreau, the man who said that man is rich in proportion to the number of things which he can afford to let alone. Now, of course, he went out in the 1840s to live in the woods of Massachusetts for a couple of years in a log cabin he built himself. And a lot of people will think, well, I can't go and live in a log cabin, you know, for a couple of years. This is just utopian to try and learn from someone like him. But in fact, someone like Thoreau, I think, was a very modern person who believed you could live more simply and without all those Christmas presents, even in an urban environment. I think he thought that, you know, you could build more of your own furniture, buy secondhand clothes, drop down your consumption levels, and think about that your real luxuries are not a plush sofa, but something like having time to spend with your friends and with your children, or for going for long walks in nature and things like that. And of course, you have to do experiments. For example, I recommend that people try doing what I think of as a needs and wants experiment. So for 1 month, make a note of every single thing you spend, from shoelaces to your mortgage payments, and simply label each item as a need or a want. And then in the following month, see if you can halve the amount that you spent on your wants. And, you know, that, again, could be a disaster, but you might find it really quite uplifting.
I'll start after New Year's.
That's cheating.
Roman Krasnarek, he's a cultural thinker. He's a founding faculty member of the School of Life in London. And he's out with a new book called How Should We Live? It's a book about looking to history to solve some of our modern problems. One of the things that really touched me in this book is writing about what you call death style. First of all, define that for us.
Well, if you open a newspaper, they're full of lifestyle sections, and I think there should be death style sections as well. And by death style, I mean the art of growing old and facing your mortality and dying well. And I think it's really important to think about that, because we live in a society that tries to shield us very much from death. You know, death is still pretty much a taboo topic of conversation, just like sex was in the 19th century. So I'm all for trying to start conversations about death.
So you look back through history to the ancients and to more recent past, when death was much closer to the way that people lived. What can we learn about that from our own fear and sanitization, as some people accuse, of death?
I think it's absolutely fascinating to go back to the medieval period in Europe, when death was absolutely everywhere. That was partly because people were dying young at the age of 30 or 40. It was also because death iconography was everywhere. There were paintings of skeletons dancing on the walls of churches. People even wore brooches and jewelry full of skulls and crossbones. And the idea really was that if you were had death very much present to you, it gave people, and this is really extraordinary, a love of life that I think we don't have today when we're spending on average 4 hours a day watching television.
You write about Philippe Petit, the high wire artist who strung a high wire between the World Trade Towers in the 1970s, about the Mexican Day of the Dead celebrations and the New Orleans jazz funerals. How do you tie those together? What do they suggest to us about the way that we should be living our life today?
I think examples like the high wire artist Philippe Petit is telling us to take more risks with our lives. And I think this is one of the great lessons that runs through the history of humanity, that people who have lived deep and sucked all the marrow from life have taken risks. They have gone against the norm. They've experimented with their jobs or where they lived, how they had conversations, all these different areas of life. So I think we can look to them, but I think also we can look to other cultures, as you say, the Mexican Day of the Dead or the New Orleans jazz funerals, and think, okay, here are cultures where death is very much present. So let's talk about death. Let's talk with our friends about what kind of funeral you're going to like, or even, I think, in a way, celebrate the small deaths of everyday life. You know, I have little children, and I think to myself now, my daughter is only going to be learning to talk once, so why stay up late at work answering emails when I could be with her for this one moment which is going to pass, the little death of her childhood? And I think I should try and be there for it. And that reminder of the presence of these small deaths in everyday life, I think, can bring us back into the present.
Roman Krznarek, Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Roman Krznarek is a cultural thinker, writer, and founding faculty member of the School of Life in London. He's author of the new book, How Should We Live? We have more on his books for the School of Life series and the new book, including some terrific reviews, at wordofmouthradio.org.
Should old acquaintance be forgotten, never brought to mind? Should old acquaintance be forgot and days old lang syne? For